Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show, and welcome to the new look and feel of the screen. I will admit I was as surprised as you are as how it all looks. We still have some work on that. But they're revamping and fixing up and changing the technology, so always a few challenges in that process. But hopefully you can hear me well. Today's April 11th in 2011, so 4-11-11. It's 8 a.m. in sunny Arizona. We're warming up from an unusually cold weekend for this time of year. I know you that live in the rest of the cold world probably can't appreciate how we have to wear sweaters occasionally. There was a lot of uncertainty at the end of last week with the possibility of a federal government shutdown in the U.S. Strangely enough, it affected our program schedule. We had planned on continuing the topic of entrepreneurs and small business that we touched on in our last radio show with Pete Peters of the Boomer and the Babe. Our planned guest today was an employee of the federal government who would not be able to be here if there were a government shutdown, since we really weren't sure until real late on Friday. We didn't want to try to rearrange and take the risk and not be ready. So we've rearranged the schedule a little bit. He will be joining us the next show. I'll tell you more about that in a little while. Today I've got a lot to cover. Essentially, I want to cover with you the essence of the Ten Commandments of investing and the First Commandment, one of the very, very important things that probably one of the most important things you can appreciate and learn and use in your investing. And I can assure you that if you violate the First Commandment, you will lose money. So it might be a good way to start a week and start the day. Those in the U.S., or at least on the West Coast, some of you are well underway with your day or even heading into the evening. This whole government shutdown and somebody having to rearrange their schedule is really a surprise to me. You see, government employees, except for essential, and this is, we're talking federal government in the U.S., sorry, other than the essential employees, which are supposed to show up to work, anybody that is not in that group are not allowed to do any work at all. I assume they would be on a non-paid furlough. In the worst case, they'd just get paid or not get paid for any work they did. Well, that's not the case. It turns out that they can be fired if they do any work while the government is shut down, whether they go into the office and shuffle paperwork or they come on a radio show. Having always worked in the private sector, this was a surprise to me. Small business owners like me, of course, work almost all the time. When I worked for large companies, there was never an objection if I decided to work on my vacation, whether in the office or in the home. I also allowed my employees to work while taking vacation. I once joked to a labor inspector that my employees would take their past vacation on weekends. She thought I was serious and got very, very upset. Once I asked her if she was current on using all her vacation, she changed her tone and said, "Well, there's a lot of work to be done. I can't keep up with all my vacation." Said case in point. We moved on. But I guess the federal government's very, very different than private business. Gee, I wonder why almost everything handled by private companies is done more efficiently than by the government. I'll remind you, I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday, same channel, same time. We're here to talk about building your wealth. If you want to get a reminder directly to your email, there's one of two things you can do, or you can do both of them. First of all, you can send an email to me at ron@wealthdna.us, ron@wealthdna.us, and we'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Also, on your screen, there is a follow button. you'll be informed of each of the great shows on the Boomer and Babe Network. Now, exactly where that is on the current screen, I'll be darned if I know, but it should have been on the very... No, it's there. Okay, there is a follow button right above my overly stretched picture. We'll work on that in the next week or so. The Boomer and Babe Network covers a number of different topics. This one, of course, is about building your wealth. There are shows on health, wealth, and happiness. So you'd be in touch with Boomer and Babe, and they'd let you know about each of the shows that are taking place. And, of course, this one would be featured in there as well. Now, one more bit of housekeeping. During this radio show, we welcome you to ask questions. You can either enter the chat room, and just below the picture there is a chat window. You can basically type in your message there. Our producer will let me know, because I don't always keep an eye on that window as I'm looking through some of my notes and thinking here. Or you can call in. The call-in number is 917-388-4162. Let me repeat that. You can call in at 917-388-4162. You'll come into the back room. Producer will let me know, hopefully during a breath as opposed to the middle of a sentence, but that's always a challenge. But not a problem. We'd love to have you ask your questions, maybe some of the things related to you and the first commandment of investing. Well, back to that topic. I guess the best place to start with the Ten Commandments investing is to tell you a little bit about them. They were first brought down and revealed in 2003, so not that long ago. There was a series of articles published in Budapest, Hungary. Doesn't sound like the middle of the world, does it? Well, who would have expected this little country of Israel would have been the start of the civilized world as we know it today? So Budapest, Hungary was the start of the Ten Commandments of Investing. And yes, I was indeed the one who revealed them. These commandments will be compiled in a book. We're scheduling publication later this year, and the title of the book, very appropriately, The Ten Commandments of Investing. I'm sure you're familiar with the other Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments brought down from the mountain many thousands of years ago. Depending on which religion you subscribe to, you, as I did, probably assume that those Ten Commandments are only known to people of that same faith. Well, it turns out that's not true. Whether you're a Christian as I am and use the Bible as the basis of your faith, or you're Jewish and use the Torah, which is really the Old Commandments, or if you use the Koran, or if you follow Buddhist teachings, you're all familiar with the same Ten Commandments. A little fact you may not have been aware of. Yes, those Ten Commandments we learned early in our lives, are truly universal. They're universal rules delineating between good and bad behavior. Think about the analogy with investing. Okay, those Ten Commandments tell you how to live your life. Well, I'm going to be drawing a lot of analogies to the Ten Commandments investing. These Ten Commandments investing help us invest. We can invest well if we follow them, or we invest poorly, which means we probably lose money or don't keep up with everybody else if we don't. You're not familiar with these commandments, you say. Why is that? Now, probably in your course in personal finance and grade school or high school, you say you didn't have courses in personal finance? Well, if there were courses in personal finance, and I really wish they were, and maybe someday there will, but at this point they really don't exist for the most part. If we had courses in personal finance, just like we have in religion, you might have learned these fundamental principles much earlier. Or if your parents were among the 1 or 2% of the population that are truly wealthy, you'd be familiar with these principles. Now, you might not know which is the first, which is the second, exactly the sequence, but that's really, in the end, less important. Do you remember in the other Ten Commandments, which is the fourth and which is the sixth? Now you know the basic principles. Now you can look them up, unlike the Ten Commandments of Investing. You'll be able to look those up later this year once the book is published. And, of course, if you listen to the show, we'll periodically share one of those commandments. Why is it the rich and powerful, the multimillionaires, the truly wealthy, that understand the fundamental principles, don't just write them down and make them available to the other 7 billion people on Earth? Wouldn't that be fair? I'd be using some analogies. Well, let's go back to the analogy thousands of years ago, the priests and the scribes. They knew, they could read, they learned about the Bible, the Torah, the Quran. Why didn't they just make it available for everybody to read? And yet they didn't. As a matter of fact, it was considered a heretic, the guy that finally translated them into the common man's language. No, they had an advantage over lay people by not sharing that written word. People had to count on their interpretation and sections selected to share. In other words, the wealthy have an advantage by not telling everybody else what works and what doesn't work. Interesting point, huh? So you may wonder, but just use that analogy. Think back to biblical days. Why is it that the priests and the scribes didn't translate this stuff and let everybody else know, take full advantage? The analogies will continue. Let me use the analogy again of the Bible. And again, it doesn't matter which of the books you use, but I'm going to use the Bible because I'm most familiar with it. You are probably sitting there and saying, well, Ron, just kind of spew them out. Tell us the Ten Commandments of Investing. Let me write them down. And then I don't need to listen to the rest. I can just go ahead and start living life a little differently, investing differently. And my net worth, I'll be able to add a digit or two to it over the next 5 or 10 years. Well, back to that Bible. You have a copy, most likely. If you don't, you should. And you can look them up anytime you want. You might have a challenge finding them, but the Ten Commandments are in there. You can reread them. You can reread them anytime you want, and yet, do you live a perfect life? Do you frequently violate one or more of those commandments? Very strange. So if I gave you a list of the Ten Commandments of Investing, it might be the same way. Even though you can look them up, even though you know them, you might not follow them regularly. Why is it people going back to church that they've already learned it once? They heard the Ten Commandments, or they have the Bible. Why don't they just follow it? Well, maybe we need to be reminded. Maybe we need to hear how we apply it in our lives. Now that analogy applies. Because quite frankly, just like you don't live a perfect life, and neither do I, we're frequently going to violate the Ten Commandments of Investing if we don't stay in tune to them. We don't keep focusing on them. We don't talk to others and share those ideas. But that's hard to do today before they've been published. And just like going to church, it's helpful to have people interpret, or somebody interpret those commandments and help us apply them in our lives. And then we also run into the old thought process of, well, wait a minute. Everybody else kind of has a different set of mores, and we don't live the way the Ten Commandments were written way back then. I don't need to follow that. I'm going to do what everybody else does. If everybody else does it okay, it's okay with me. You know, I can do it too. In other words, if others violate it, it's okay. Is it? Well, just like you have to have the list of commandments to live a good life, the list is far from sufficient. Necessary, but not sufficient. Building wealth is the same way. We will gradually share the Ten Commandments, so you'll have that list. And the book will have chapters discussing each, and then it'll have a chapter in between. So you'll have chapter 1.5, talking about the applications of Commandment 1, and how to use it in your life, and how to invest more wisely. That's what the Ten Commandments is about. It's not just knowing them, not reading them once. there is an overarching theme. And whether you look at the Bible or the Ten Commandments of investing, these commandments are simple. They're just not easy to follow regularly. Do you ever think of that difference? They're simple. I know that. I just kind of forgot. Or I didn't live that way. Or I violated it because everybody else does. We are, after all, human beings with emotions. And we're easily influenced by what others are doing or telling us to do. The old peer pressure. Whether you're kids or adults, doesn't matter. That peer pressure exists. We take advice from people that maybe mean well, but don't necessarily give us good advice. And maybe we shouldn't take advice from them. Like advice about your marriage from a friend who's twice been divorced. Well, they're experienced. They've been there twice or three times. They would know. And yet they're giving you advice on how to run your marriage. Or real estate advice from someone who rents a home because they lost theirs to foreclosure. Well, of course they have more experience than I do. Are these people we want to be taking advice from? How about financial advice from a friend or even a financial advisor or a broker who has less money than you do? Oh, they know a lot about money. They just don't have any. Somebody knows a lot about marriage. They just can't make one work. These are the people we get advice from. Rather than going back to the initial word, to the meaning of those commandments, that's what today's show is about, is to kind of impress on you that just giving you the commandment, it's simple. Chances are you know it. But I highly recommend today you take the moment to write it down. And more importantly, look at how you can apply it. Apply it in the next few months, analyzing your investment behavior, especially your emotions, using this commandment as a guide. That's the overview of the Ten Commandments. Now let's get into the first one. The first one, you ready to write it down? It's buy low and sell high. You say, wait a minute, Ron, I know that one. I've heard that. It's obvious. It's simple. Well, how well do you follow it? Do you follow it all along? I'm probably one of the better ones at doing that just because I've had the opportunity to gather these Ten Commandments and bring them down and write about them. And yet, I'll make some mistakes too. Now, the best way for me to explain this commandment is to use a real story. A lot of people tell me I should use stories more. I'm too factual, charts and graphs. Well, I'm going to share with you today a real story, a story about a young man who I know well. He's living on the East Coast, U.S. East Coast. Much colder climate than we have here in Arizona. You see, as he broke into the executive ranks at a multinational company, so he was doing well. He was earning a pretty decent living, but he realized he should focus more on investing his assets. If he's just going to save it and it's not earning anything, he's not going to get anywhere. He didn't want to work forever, just like most of us don't. He knew the key to financial freedom is massive, passive income. You've got to have something earning money for you, not working for money all the time. He had a good start. He sold his first two homes at a good profit. He's now living his third home, 2,500 square foot, plus a beautifully finished 1,000 square foot basement with wet bar and wine cellar, great place to entertain, sitting on a half acre lot in a nice suburban neighborhood. It's not a bad lifestyle. Comfortable, nice neighborhood, nice neighbors. He invested primarily in his home and mutual funds. He worked a full-time job, so he didn't have time for stock picking and doing the individual selections and trading. He also used his debt and leverage wisely. There's a difference between no debt and using debt and leverage wisely. We'll talk about that more in the future. I've hinted at it in the past. And he, of course, watched Louis Rukeyser's Wall Street Week on a regular basis. The show's no longer on, unfortunately. So we're talking a few years back. Other than You see, one very bad experience he had with stock options that I got to hear a lot of the detail of. His investments and net worth were rising steadily year after year. Now, how did he know that? Important side point here. He tracked his net worth twice a year, and I recommend this one to everyone. And actually, as we share more on the show, I'm going to encourage you to focus more on IGA rather than net worth. No, IGA is not the grocery chain. It's income-generating assets. Net worth is useful, but not all assets are created equal. So income-generating assets. More on that in future shows. Let's get back to the story. One particular weekend was very exciting, especially exciting. You see, the day after watching his favorite weekly television program for investors, Louis Rukeyser, he'd be leaving his two kids with his in-laws, boarding a flight with his wife for a second honeymoon in Hawaii. Not everybody gets a chance to take trips to Hawaii. Now, it's a little easier from the West Coast where I am, but from the East Coast, it's a pretty long trip. You see, the stock market had been rising very nicely for several months, actually most of that year. It was up 17% for that year. His assets were rising along with the market. Since he tracked them, he knew his assets were rising about 20% per year, partially from savings and the rest from investment returns. Passive income and two salaries allowed them to travel without a care in the world. Here where they were, heading off to Hawaii. Exciting night. Life does not get much better than this. Your nice suburban home, a couple young kids. The in-laws will take care of the kids while you take a trip over to Hawaii. Kind of a second honeymoon. And by the way, I can share a little bit about the future of this couple, this particular young investor. Within a few years, this young couple would be millionaires. You could probably tell from what I already shared, they were doing pretty well. Life is good. Now, that particular show, they haven't left yet. He's listening to his favorite investing show. One of the panelists that week, Dr. Martin Zweig. Now, regular viewers knew him as Marty. Dr. Martin Zweig was one of the gloomiest of the panelists that particular night. As he said, his indicators were so negative. He always talked about his indicators. Never shared exactly what they were. He's a technician. His indicators were so negative, he felt they were about to have a stock market crash. He didn't say drop. He said a crash. Now, the other panelists and special guests, and the special guest usually is kind of more of a renowned person that is going to take kind of the, you know, main focus of that show, they were much more upbeat. Given the great momentum and the cash still flowing into stocks, that's one of the indicators they all look at, as well as cash still flowing in. If cash is flowing in, people are buying. Prices will go up. Market's been up nicely. Cash still flowing in. Well, the show finished. Got their sleep, got on their flight. And Monday morning, the young couple woke up in their Maui Intercontinental Hotel at 6 in the morning. Got to get up early in the morning. You got to take full advantage of the Hawaiian beaches, that crystal clear blue ocean. If you haven't been there, it is just unbelievable how blue that ocean is, much like the Mediterranean. And yes, 6 a.m. sounds early, doesn't it? Well, not really. You see, they got up for breakfast and turned on CNN, and somehow maybe all of a sudden 6 o'clock did seem very early. They felt a bit disoriented. Maybe it's the jet lag. Now, for those of you that have not been to Hawaii or have only seen it on one of those maps where it looks like a little inset, a little kind of the islands and Alaska just off of the coast of California, it's not really just off the coast of California. It's actually when it's 6 a.m. in Hawaii, it's noon in New York City. There's a six-hour time difference. It's 3 hours from the West Coast. Really is a long way from the U.S. West Coast. It's just that if you put it on the map that way, nobody would ever notice it was over there. So they show us a little inset hanging off of California. It's 3 hours away, three time zones away. The newscaster on CNN that morning was saying the stock market had already dropped 11% and seemed to be in a free fall. Sound familiar? You been there recently? Well, our investor figured breakfast could be delayed a little bit. Let me make a frantic call to the stockbrokers and the mutual funds and find out what the heck is going on. And maybe it'd be a good time to put in some sell orders, because if it really isn't a free fall, it might be worth getting out. You see, millions of people had the same idea. The phone lines were absolutely jammed. Every phone line was busy, just kept getting busy signals and lines busy. What to do? Well, he decided after a little while of trying, the best thing was to have a calm breakfast, a brief walk on the beach, think through it, and then try the phone again. But it wasn't easy eating a calm breakfast when his stomach was doing flip-flops. Market had been rising, it's dropping 11%, and looked like it was in free fall. What am I going to do? By the time he could try again, the market had slowed its decline, but the phone lines were still busy. Just could not get through. Here's a question to you. What to do? What would you do? Before returning to our story and telling you how it all worked out, I'd like you to analyze that. Put yourself in his shoes. Review how you'd react. This is the essence of the first commandment, to buy low and sell high. What would you do? The market's crashing. You can't do anything. You're helpless. You're far away. The time is clicking, ticking. You're worried. Your two young kids back there, your house, your mortgage, your money that you've saved, worked so hard for, is now at risk. Wow, he was pretty depressed. Well, of course, once the market closes, not much you can do. And in Hawaii, that's pretty early in the day. The news that evening, and you can bet he watched CNN, CNBC, whichever networks, probably throughout the whole evening. Didn't enjoy that day as much as he could have in Hawaii. All the newspapers the next day, the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, they did graphs. They stayed up all night and did some nice graphs showing how this time period overlaid September of 1929, how similar, eerily similar, they were, that big uptick and the big drop. Of course, September 1921 is what triggered the Great Depression. Now, what would run through your head? What's even worse, the percentage loss was nearly double that in 1929. So the comparison was similar, but the magnitudes were bigger. They rescaled those charts and overlaid them. They looked awfully similar. Was the world about to go into the next depression? He'd be arriving on his return flight and find out he has no job. Would millions, along with he and his wife, be losing their jobs, as happened in the early 1930s? This was all running through his head. It should be running through yours. You've seen this before. You'll see it again. The more he read and watched the news, the more he worried. With 13 years of hard work, saving and investing, and he was darn good at both, would they be lost? Would it be too late to sell and recover some of his hard-earned assets? The part he could still get out. He's still got to make those mortgage payments. What if there's no job? Does this seem something like something you've experienced fairly recently, like in the last few years? Well, let me tell you the dates here. That day, the Dow Jones Industrials ended with a 508.3 drop. That was 22.6%. 22.6% unprecedented drop in one single day. The biggest one-day loss in history. That day is now known as Black Monday. You see, it was October 19th, 1987. Wow. Today, that drop would be 2,800 points. Now, could you imagine getting up in the morning and finding out that the stock market had dropped 2,800 points? What would you do? Would you panic if that happened today? I suspect you would. Now, I'm hoping this story and reviewing the first commandment will give you a little bit of calm. See, he didn't have that advantage. Back in 1987, these commandments weren't written yet. He was a young, inexperienced investor and really not sure what to do. Yeah, his assets have been rising 20% a year, so he had some experience, but he'd never experienced this before. If he could have gotten through the phones, he would have sold a lot of stock. You see, maybe there are times in our lives that what seemed awful, we just couldn't control it, was all good news. Maybe it was really God's plan that the phones were all blocked. There was nothing he could do. Now, most of you realize, now that I've told you the date, 1987, there was no internet. You couldn't place online orders if you were thinking, that's what I'll do. Or you couldn't send an email. There was such no such animal. We're talking pretty recent history, but a big difference from today. Well, had he sold, well, how would it have looked? By the end of the very next day, Tuesday, October 20th, the market not only started to recover, but regained half of Monday's losses. The market was up more than 10%. You see, the world did not end. He could now continue his vacation more relaxed than he had for the last 36 hours. Time to hit the beaches, enjoy, relax, calm the nerves. But you see, he didn't do anything. Turned out to be the best thing to do. Oh, maybe I forgot to mention who that young investor was. Might be worth telling you. It was me. Yeah, it was me. I remember that day well. Just like so many things in history that really shock you or surprise you. Now, what's the lesson we all can learn from my experience? There's an appropriate saying, and I've tried to find the original source, and if anybody knows it, I'd love to get it. The night is darkest just before dawn. And boy, was it dark, despite the sunshine, despite the blue sea, on October 19th of 1987. If you had money in the market, as he did, as I did, quite a bit of money, everything but the equity of the house, and you hear a 22% drop. It's pretty scary. You don't know where. In other words, one-fifth of your assets have just been wiped out in a single day. 13 years and one-fifth of it's gone. Well, the night is dark, it's just before dawn. When the market is down, it's a far better time to buy than when it was up. See, had I been able to get through, and if I'd invested more, if I knew more and invested more at the end of that gloomy day, I would have earned 10% return in the very next day. That's a heck of a lot better than buying a car 10% off or buying clothes. You see, I could have actually borrowed money to buy stocks, called margin, and earned a very large return on somebody else's money. The cost of that margin would have been almost zero and a 10% return. If I'd sold that day, it would have been a financial disaster. One-fifth of my assets would have been gone, essentially forever. But who has the guts to buy when the market's dropping in a free fall and all the news is bad? Good investors. The ones that have lived through these events, just like you did. I'm hoping by sharing the story without telling you the ending ahead of time, you could experience it, as we'd say, vicariously rather than having to go through it yourself. A smart man learns from his mistakes. A wise man learns from others' mistakes. And who else has the guts to buy? People that understand the Ten Commandments of investing. If you've lived through it or you understand these commandments, either one or both, you'll buy when it's low. You'll sell when it's high. See, just like the Ten Commandments in the Bible, just like the Ten Commandments of investing, the first commandment is simple. Buy low, sell high. Everybody knows that one. And yet it's probably the most commonly violated of all the commandments. It's either ignored or violated, just like the other nine. It's simple, but not easy to follow. These rules are indeed universal. Just like I shared with you, the Ten Commandments are known to virtually every major religion in the world. They're universal and they're simple. They're just not easy to follow. Reread them. Look at them. Discuss them. Talk about them. Think about how you react. Now, how do you know when the market or a particular stock or a commodity or real estate is at or near a bottom? You'll never know until it's already over. After the fact is the only way for sure. But I can give you one indicator, the indicator that I felt like I'd never felt before. And it comes back once in a while. When you have a lot of money invested, as I did back in 1987, and you've got debts and you've got a job at stake, you start getting a knot in your stomach as the price drops. I couldn't enjoy that day. That knot in my stomach was unmistakable. That's why I remember that day. The more intense that knot, the more likely you should ignore the pain and buy more. Boy, is that hard to do. It's simple, actually, but it's not easy. It's hard to do. 2008, we had a maybe less dramatic but huge drop in the market in a very short period of time. What were you doing? Selling, panicking. I had people coming into my office and saying, Ron, if it drops another 5%, I'm selling. I can't take it anymore. I tried to counsel them, shared with them. I said, look, if you really believe that, then instead of selling it all, sell 5 or 10%. And if you're wrong, you'll only lose that amount. If it keeps going down, you can sell some more. But at least you sold some at a higher price. But you know it's going to bounce back. It has every single time in history. This time is different. How many times have you heard that? It's simple, but not easy. How many times have such drops led to a mass exodus of investors? Way too often, I can tell you. And it happens regularly somewhere in the world. Markets are all different. Not every market goes up in sync. More today than they did back in 1987. But nonetheless, somewhere in the world, the market is dropping and people are panicking. Unfortunately, for many novice investors, unfortunately, it wasn't for me. It only happens once. They sell, calculate their losses, and vow to never gamble again. My advice to these people in the form of a question, have you ever had a bad meal? Well, of course you have. Do you still eat? That analogy is important here. You see, just because you've lost money in the market does not mean you will not regain it. If you sell, you won't. Those people that I happen to live in Poland for a long time, 1984, there was a crash of huge magnitude. When I talk huge, 95% drop. Hundreds of thousands of people vowed to never do that again. Those people are not among the wealthy today. Many others are. The people waited for the drop to buy are the smart investors. You see, the money that's lost, whether it was October 19th or it was 1994 in Poland or any other market, the money they lost as they left when the market was down was earned by some other smart investor who bought their lowest priced shares and sold them later for a profit. That's something we forget. Every time we buy a stock or sell a stock, buy a house or sell a house, somebody has to be willing to sell it or buy it at the same price. When we sell, someone buys it from us. So if you're panicking and selling as the prices are dropping, chances are I'm buying your shares. And I'm going to thank you. Buy low and sell high. Not the other way around. By the way, yes, you can sell high and buy low. Called short selling. That also works in a down market. A little bit riskier. But nonetheless, violating it by buying high and selling low is guaranteed to lose money. Same with short selling. If you sell high, sell low and buy high, you lose money. So smart investors buy low and sell high. When the stock prices were falling in 2008, I was indeed buying. As house prices were falling, I changed my business focus and started investing in real estate. Now, history tells us, in both cases, it turns out, I was a bit too early. Stock prices dropped further and housing prices dropped further. Of course, I got that knot in my stomach. I couldn't predict how low prices would go, but I knew they were a heck of a lot lower than they were before. And by the way, nobody is smart enough, despite the investment advice they will sell you. 2008, I invested more until I reached my maximum leverage. No, I didn't just invest my own cash. I used loans to buy more, and I continue to do the same. when prices drop. Is it maybe time to question this fundamental principle and sell some of my assets and lower my debt, especially in real estate? How about in 1987? Maybe it was time to do a little selling, pay off some of my house debt. Worrying again has proved to be a waste of time and energy. See, March 9th of 2009 was the bottom of the stock market. Prices have risen. Maybe you didn't notice, we've mentioned on the show before, prices have risen about 100% since then in a two-year period. Now, by the way, when prices are up 100%, might be an opportunity to do a little selling, and yes, I am. Because I bought low, I'm selling high. Let's call the profit. April 5th of 2009, just 1 month later, appeared to be and was a bottom for the housing market. Prices rose pretty steadily in Phoenix alone. I tracked them carefully. We're up 13% a year later. But they came back down to that low again. That's where we are. Should I question this fundamental principle? Should I be selling? Should I sell low? Of course not. You see, real estate does not go to zero, and most people will be shocked when prices rebound. They'll be saying, God, I wish I would have bought when it was low. But I didn't. Smart investors buy low, sell high. You see, a lot has changed in the many years since Black Monday. Yeah, I'm still young, just as I was then, maybe a little older. But now I've got a lot more investment experience. The world has changed. Take a look at some of the places that I lived in the recent past. I lived in countries that I couldn't even visit back in 1987. It's not that long ago, and yet the internet's been invented. Email, text messages, cell phones, things that we didn't really understand. Cell phones started to exist back then, pretty old technology. And in these countries, I couldn't visit them in 1987. They were part of the Soviet Union. Just a few years later, the world changed. Those countries are now part of the European Union. Now the Middle East is in turmoil. Can you predict what's going to happen there? I sure can't. No one knows how that will end up. Things will be different. Many trillions of dollars, not millions, not billions, but trillions of dollars have been earned and lost in stock markets around the world. And yet one thing did not change since 1987 or 1929, the basic principles of sound investing. Learn them and stick with them. You'll be glad you did. Do you remember the first commandment? You wrote it down hopefully earlier in the show. Buy low and sell high. Simple, but not easy. And I will go back to a guarantee I mentioned at the beginning for some of you that joined us later. I can guarantee you, and there aren't many guarantees in life, but I can guarantee you that if you violate the first commandment, you will lose money. It just works that way. Following the first commandment regularly, you will make money. You just don't know exactly when the low is or the high. But buying low and selling high, nobody I have known, and I know a lot of people, and I've met a lot of people, and a lot of investors, and a lot of people that are even more experienced in investing than I am. Nobody has ever complained when they take a profit. When they take a profit, you just can't lose money when you take a profit. Yes, you can look back and say, you know what, if I would have waited another week, I would have earned more. Hell, a profit is a profit. Losing money is losing money. You can't re-earn that very easily. The Ten Commandments are fundamental principles. They're key aspects to the N that we discuss in Wealth DNA, the knowledge piece. And by the way, that's one of the main reasons the book on the Ten Commandments will be published before the Wealth DNA book. It's fundamental, and it will be referenced in the Wealth DNA book. You've got to know, you've got to understand, you've got to follow, and you've got to continue to lead track how you're doing against the Ten Commandments of investing. Well, we've gotten through this a lot faster than I expected. And yet, we've covered a lot of ground. I'd like you to think about this commandment. Simple, but it's not easy. Also remind you that Tomorrow we've got another seminar. If you're here in the Arizona area, we welcome you. Learn to earn a higher return. You know, it's funny. Back in 1987, I knew the basics of what I teach in that seminar, and yet I didn't use it. I knew that those basics since I was 15. I didn't take advantage of them. That's the one thing that I look back in my investing life and career, and if I could do something different, I would have continued to do what I learned at the age of 15. I could have been doing it while I was working, while I was doing my investing. And yet I didn't, and I didn't realize until a few years ago. Don't make that same mistake. Take advantage of what we teach at our seminars and do it. Don't wait 30 or 40 years to take advantage of it. That seminar, by the way, is tomorrow at 10:15 a.m. It's held at NTrust Arizona's Knowledge Center right here in Phoenix. I'm sorry, it's not available in webinars yet. Someday it will be. And if you didn't receive information about this show, make sure you email me, ron@wealthdna.us, ron@wealthdna.us. I'll send you the address about the show, of course, and the address for NTrust, so I'll send you both if you email me today if you didn't get that information. I'll also remind you our next Wealth DNA radio show is the fourth Monday of the month. That's Monday, April 25th. Wow, I guess after talking that long, my throat is dry here. Monday, April 25th, same time, same place, 8 a.m. Our guest will be Michael Jamieson. Yes, he works for the government, the federal government. Now, here's something that, if you were surprised at the beginning of the show, that I mentioned that federal employees are not allowed to work unless they're essential. Had the government shut down, they would have been subject to being fired had they worked. That was a surprise to me, and hopefully some new information to you. Well, I'm going to share something else with you about our guest that maybe you probably didn't know. He is the business liaison working for Representative Trent Franks. You see, Representative Trent Franks is our congressional representative representing the district where my office is. And he's his business liaison. Now, how many of you realize that congressmen and senators have a business liaison? You see, a business liaison is a person that somebody like myself can contact. I can't afford the cost of $1 million to go lobby my congressional representative. I can write him a letter among thousands that he gets a day. But it's very expensive to lobby in Washington and try to get your message across. Well, here we have a business liaison that I can talk to and share what my main issues, and he's actually joined me in several key meetings and willing to do more. Huh, another surprising fact you probably didn't know about the government. Well, we're going to see you back here in a couple weeks, and we'll be talking to Michael Jamieson, business liaison for Representative Trent Franks. Hopefully he'll share some more surprising things about the federal government, share a little bit about the things he's working on, the priorities the congressman has. Great show to call in and ask or chat and send in some questions to him. We'll have a full agenda. I was worried about overrunning today, quite frankly. This topic is emotional, just like anything that you've lived through. And hopefully you've lived through it today, through my experience, rather than trying to do it on your own. You remember those days. Do you remember September 11th, where you were? I sure do. Do you remember when John F. Kennedy was shot, for those of you that are old enough? Do you remember where you were? I do. Well, I remember that day in Hawaii and Maui in the Intercontinental Hotel at 6 o'clock in the morning and CNN on the TV show showing the stock market dropping. Boy, that left an impression. And yet, I did the right thing because I didn't have an opportunity to do the wrong thing. Don't count on that in your life. Know what the right thing to do and do it. Buy low and sell high. The market's up 100% since the low in March of 2009. Is this a good time to buy? Well, maybe. Probably a safer time to do some selling, taking some profits. Now, if you haven't been investing for the last 2 years, kick yourself. You don't buy low and you don't sell high. You're missing the first commandment. Hopefully the show has a good impression on you. If you didn't get a chance to listen to all of it, it will be archived later on. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks. Michael Jamieson, business liaison. And again, I'll remind you, if you haven't received emails about this show and want those reminders, either click the follow button at the top of your screen there or send me an email, ron@wealthdna.us. If you have some questions, some comments, some topics you'd like to cover, let us know. This show is for you. It's not just for me to reminisce, to relearn. It's to share. I want to create a million millionaires over the next number of years. I want you to be part of those. Happy investing takes full advantage of the first commandment.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.